The problem I have with Colorado, one of the big problems, they do mail-in voting. They went to all mail-in voting. So they have automatically crooked elections.
That's how it is. Mail-in voting, automatically crooked.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Putin says so.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Whatever.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast, like it or not. And you might, even if I might not, but we are back after a much-needed week or so off through the Labor Day holiday. But never fear, we will get you caught up on everything that we missed and maybe that you missed as well in the bargain. Well, not everything, frankly, because it was an impossibly busy news week and a half since we have been gone, I think.
Oh, my Lord, yes.
I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
I say I think because I was trying not to look, but you kind of couldn't help it.
Yes.
So let's do this. Let's just jump first right into the latest news coming out of the holiday this week first. On Monday, Labor Day, the New York Times reported that more than 445,000 federal employees have had their union protections stripped from them by the Trump administration since he took office for his second term. Even as the administration is responding to hundreds of thousands of protesters all over the country on Labor Day, claiming, and I quote, that, quote, no one has done more for working men and women than President Donald Trump.
Smell the gaslighting.
Please hold your laughter. We got a full hour to get through today. On that note, crowds gathered in hundreds of cities and towns, big and small, across the nation on Monday, on Labor Day, the Labor Day holiday, to denounce the overwhelming corrupt influence of America's business tycoons and corporations over the second Trump administration. As Washington Post reports, May Day Strong, a coalition of labor and advocacy groups, organized more than 1,000 events, including protests and parades, in more than 900 cities on Monday. The event, called Workers Over Billionaires, was backed by the AFL-CIO, the nation's largest federation of labor unions, national political advocacy groups like Indivisible and Move On, and local grassroots organizations. In Chicago, threats by the Trump administration to increase immigration enforcement operations and deploy National Guard soldiers loomed over the protests there. At the Windy City city demonstrations, Mayor Brandon Johnson led the chant, quote, no troops in Chicago. And no matter what comes from the White House, Johnson said, Chicago will always be a labor town. Asked for comment on the protests, White House spokesperson Taylor Rogers said that the Republicans were, quote, once again, the proud party of the American worker. That, of course, after the administration has fired tens of thousands of them since taking office in January and taken away union collective bargaining rights from hundreds of thousands of them who weren't fired. Quote, no one has done more for working men and women than President Donald Trump, said Rogers on Monday with an apparently straight face, adding, quote, President Trump believes the American workers are the heart and soul of our economy. Organizers believe that this year's Labor Day will go down as one of the largest mobilizations on the federal holiday in decades. They hope the rallies across the country remind people of the origins of the holiday, which was first held in New York City back in 1882 as a celebration of workers. Maybe that's why we didn't hear much from Donald Trump over the weekend. Quote, we want to put the labor back in Labor Day, said Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. It's about the people who make this country hum, she said, the work that they do and putting workers front and center. Since the start of Trump's second term, hundreds of thousands, if not millions at this point, have gathered across the country in organized protests like the hands-off protests, the No Kings rallies, to oppose Trump's policies and disgraced billionaire Elon Musk's role in dismantling federal agencies. Parts of the demands listed on May Day Strong's website on Monday include protecting and defending Medicaid, Social Security, and other programs for working people, all of which have been cut or threatened with cuts by the administration, who's done more for working people, blah, blah, blah. And they call, May Day Strong calls for advocating for better education, healthcare, housing funding, all of which has also been cut by this president, who has, as noted, done more for working men and women than anybody else in history, as they pretend. Quote, people are realizing that what's happening in our country is just hurting all of us, working class people, and that we need to stand up and fight together right now. That, according to Neda Dominguez, the executive director of a local worker protection group in Albuquerque called Organized Power in Numbers. Saqib Bhatti, the executive director of the Action Center on Race and the Economy, a nonprofit that helped plan the May Day Strong National Day of Action, said that the coalition's focus on organizing in local communities demonstrates how worker outrage, quote, isn't just limited to a handful of big blue cities. According to the May Day Strong website, dozens of the Labor Day events were held on Monday in small towns or suburban areas outside major metropolitan areas. Many of them were held in counties that had voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump in the 2024 presidential election. But even there, in those small towns, the tide may be turning. We'll get to some of that in a bit. Quote, it's actually pervasive in every single community across the country, Bhatti said. In small towns that may have voted overwhelmingly for Trump, folks are still pissed off that the fact that he's putting billionaires ahead of working people and that he's going to be slashing Medicaid and cutting benefits and laying off federal workers and coming after our communities. Becky Pringle, the president of the National Education Association, the largest teachers union in the country, said that she was attending a Labor Day parade in Des Moines, Iowa, a supposedly red state with a decidedly blue special election result last week that we will also get to today. She hopes that Monday's nationwide events will resonate well after Labor Day. She says it is those voices from one person in their community to another person in their community that makes all of the difference, she said. Well, we shall see. In other late news on Monday and into today, a devastating earthquake over the weekend in Afghanistan has reportedly killed more than 1,400 people so far. A devastating landslide after days of massive rainfall has wiped out an entire village in Sudan's war-torn Darfur, killing more than 1,000 people there. And here at home, on Tuesday, a federal judge ruled that Donald Trump's deployment of U.S. military forces, National Guard troops, and U.S. Marines to supposedly assist in responding to protests against immigration raids of workers in Home Depots and parking lots and car washes earlier this year by the most pro-worker president ever. Well, all of that is illegal and a violation of the U.S. Constitution, according to the judge, which prevents the use of military forces in domestic crime-fighting efforts in all but the most extraordinary circumstances. And what happened here in Los Angeles earlier this year was certainly not extraordinary. It was pretty humdrum as far as protests go in this city. Despite that illegality, Trump has since similarly deployed federal troops to D.C. for purported crime-fighting efforts. He's repeatedly suggested he will imminently do the same to Chicago as well, followed by other Democratic-run cities in blue states, despite the fact that crime rates are far higher in many GOP-controlled states. And, of course, despite the entire exercise being in violation of the law, as confirmed once again by a federal judge in California on Tuesday, who also warned that similar deployments elsewhere are likely to be similarly unlawful. The administration will undoubtedly appeal Tuesday's federal court ruling. But a lot happened while we were gone over the past week. A lot always happens when Donald Trump is in office and breaking things, including the law, including the country. But even more than usual seemed to happen while we were gone, and yet not all of it was terrible. So hopefully you also took the opportunity to sort of step away from things a little bit in the last unofficial week of summer. But given that there was so much so quickly coming in over the past week, I suspect even those trying to pay attention last week may have missed a few important things here and there. I know that I did. But from time to time in our Green News reports, as you may know, after we have been off for a number of episodes, we like to come back and do what we call a while we were out episode.
Yes, because things keep happening.
And we run through quickly, you know, through some of the top news items that we missed, the most important headlines to try to get us all caught back up. Well, we've got our first Green News report for you after our summer break coming up later this hour. Also catching up with a few things, but I kind of want to do a while we were out broadcast today to get us caught up a little bit and all of us back onto the same page as we move forward into the fall, as Congress returns from their month-long break. You think we were gone long? Their month-long break, and they face a potential government shutdown at the end of this month, September, if Republicans refuse to negotiate on spending with Democrats. And as Trump's efforts to block the release of the Epstein files continues, as he appears in them multiple times next to his longtime, now late, pedophile friend Jeffrey Epstein and his convicted sidekick Ghislaine Maxwell, that is all facing a bipartisan effort this week to call for a vote in Congress for the release of those files to the public. That is now underway. And as rumors, I guess I should call them concerns, about Trump's health continue to deepen amidst his visibly bruised hands, his swollen legs, and a very curious and unusual lack of public appearances in recent days, well, Trump did speak from the Oval Office, I believe it was. It's hard to recognize now with all the crap hanging all over it. But I think that was the Oval Office at the White House in a presumably not pre-recorded announcement, declaring that he was reversing a Biden initiative to consolidate the military's Space Command from Alabama to Colorado. And frankly, the announcement seemed to me to be more a proof of life appearance than anything else after a week of rumors about his failing health. So headline, Donald Trump is not dead yet. He said that he was moving the effort out of Colorado because Colorado has mail-in voting, as you heard him note at the top of the show. Well, newsflash, Alabama also has mail-in voting as well. But more on all of that in a little bit. So just to get us caught up from where we left off, before we can move forward, I want to sort of step through some of the key headlines over the past week, going all the way back to the night after our last show, before our break on Thursday, back the 21st of August. We were barely off the air with our conversation that day with Digby and Driftglass before a federal judge ordered the shutdown of the hastily built federal immigration detention center that Republicans sickeningly describe with glee as alligator Alcatraz. The judge in that case ordered the shutdown due to violation of environmental laws that protect the Everglades, where this monstrosity was built. Desi Doyen will have more on that in our latest Green News report later this hour.
Yep.
Another federal judge that same evening ruled that Donald Trump's criminal defense attorney, who had previously served as the lawyer for parking garage company Elena Haba, that she was serving without legal authority as Trump's U.S. attorney in New Jersey. The judge ordered that all the cases that she or her office had direct involvement in the Garden State must now be void. So, good news from a lower court. I'm sure that will be appealed. We'll see how it goes as it works its way up the food chain to the corrupt U.S. Supreme Court. The next day, on Friday, the 22nd, the weaponized Trump administration's FBI began the day by invading the home of Trump's former national security advisor turned Trump critic, John Bolton, claiming that the need for this raid was related to his misuse or retention of classified materials, something that Donald Trump knows a thing or two about, by the way, since he was actually indicted on criminal charges for having stolen tens of thousands of classified national security documents from the government upon leaving office the first time. Despite the big show made of the raid on Bolton's home, there has been no details since that I know of on what, if anything, they were either searching for or that they found during one of the first revenge raids against Trump's perceived political enemies. Later that day, the former Fox News host turned defense secretary approved the use of firearms by National Guard members patrolling the streets of the nation's capital, pretending to fight crime in a city which was already seeing its lowest violent crime rate in about 60 years. By Sunday, it was reported that National Guard members were in fact now armed while patrolling the National Mall and other tourist sites where there has traditionally been pretty much no crime at all. Though there are a lot of tourists and cameras who will see Trump's display of military might against our own citizens. In other Pete Hegseth news from a week ago Friday, his cleansing of military professionals from the top ranks of the Pentagon, that continued, specifically with his firing of the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. That's the Pentagon's main intelligence wing. After the office's assessment that Donald Trump's recent military strikes on Iran's nuclear program had a limited effect at best, but you know what? Don't like the message? Fire the messenger, who in this case was DIA Chief Lieutenant General Jeffrey Cruz. He's got to go because he told the truth. Deep in the heart of Texas, that very same day, Republicans in the state legislature finally passed their mid-decade U.S. House redistricting bill, which is designed to steal as many as 5 U.S. House seats from Democratic voters in heavily minority districts. The effort to gerrymander the state's already gerrymandered maps in Texas was answered even before Texas had completed their dirty deed at the demand of Trump, who fears he will lose control of Congress next year, by the state of California, who sort of beat him to the punch with the legislature out here several days earlier voting to place a measure on the statewide ballot this November here in California that, if adopted by voters, it would temporarily set aside the state's U.S. House map that was drawn by an independent redistricting commission in favor of a legislatively drawn map that would add as many as five new Democratic House districts in here in California in response to Texas's move. Within hours of Texas Republicans adopting their new map, Democratic voting rights attorney Mark Elias announced that his firm had filed a suit challenging those maps in federal court, charging violations of the Voting Rights Act and the 14th Amendment of the Constitution because, he wrote on social media, the new map, quote, unjustifiably considers race and partisanship as part of a voluntary mid-cycle redistricting. So basically, in Texas, they're going into all of the Democratic-leaning districts, the districts with majority-minority districts, and breaking them up and making them go away and preventing voters from selecting a representative of their choosing.
Literally splitting communities, literally splitting neighborhoods, splitting up people who have interests in common so they can have a Republican, a white Republican, obviously, represent them who is maybe 300 miles away.
Yeah, well, we talked about one of those districts in Austin, the way it's being split up now, that you could live in Austin and be part of a district where someone lives 300 miles away from you. That is the same district. But that's what they're doing, and California is pushing back, although we've got some more news on the gerrymandering war front in a bit. Also, on an incredibly busy Friday, we weren't even off the air 24 hours at this point, while Republicans and shamefully a few too many Democrats are falsely attacking Democratic New York City mayoral candidate Zoran Mamdani for being a communist, which he isn't. In the meantime, Donald Trump has the U.S. actually taking control over the means of production at major U.S. corporations, like, for example, as we learned that Friday, at Intel. By having the U.S. take a 10% ownership stake in one of the world's largest chip makers, I can only imagine what would have happened had Barack Obama suggested doing something like that. Who's the communist at this point? On that same Friday, a federal judge blocked the Trump administration from cutting funding to 34 cities and counties over their so-called immigration sanctuary policies, in which jurisdictions exercise their right to not assist federal officials in their immigration enforcement activities. They can't prevent them from carrying out their own activities. But they don't need to help them. And now the Trump administration is threatening at least 34 cities and counties because they have sanctuary policies in which jurisdictions exercise that right to not assist federal officials. The court ruled that Trump does not have the right to strip those jurisdictions of federal funding based on their right to protect residents, frankly, by explicitly not enforcing federal immigration laws on behalf of the federal authorities so that residents, citizen or otherwise, are not chilled into being, you know, frightened to report crimes or seek help from local law enforcement, as is the case in many communities where you can take advantage of undocumented citizens in all sorts of ways, because many of them fear going to the police to report a crime. That's why these sanctuary cities are important, and that's why a judge has said, no, you can't withhold funding from them, Mr. Trump, because you don't like their policies. And in another insane move by this president, the Trump administration ordered construction to stop on a $4 billion wind farm off the coast of Rhode Island that has already mostly been built. More on that and some other closures of much-needed clean energy wind farms a little bit later this hour and in Desi's Green News Report as well. Last Monday, Maryland resident and El Salvadoran national Kilmar Abrego Garcia, after being released from prison where he was held on trumped-up criminal charges here to distract from the fact that the administration had accidentally deported him to a maximum security gulag in El Salvador in violation of federal court orders, well, Abrego Garcia was detained again by ICE on Monday, this time when he showed up for a scheduled check-in. But this time, a federal judge in Maryland barred the Trump administration from immediately deporting him until he had a chance to challenge that move. Also on Monday, Trump moved to fire Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook despite lacking the authority to do so. Short of some sort of malfeasance on the part of a board member at the Independent Federal Reserve. That is why you have heard in recent weeks that the MAGA influencer who now heads up the Federal Housing Finance Agency, the FHFA, has claimed that he's found that Cook committed some sort of mortgage fraud and has recommended a criminal investigation by the Trump's DOJ, an investigation of the first black female federal governor of the Fed in U.S. history. No mortgage fraud actually proved. Public accusation that is wildly inappropriate in the first place. But all of that good enough for Trump to try to use as a pretext to fire Cook. In response, she is refusing to step down from the role. And just one day after Trump purported to fire her, she sued in federal court to block her seemingly clearly unlawful attempted firing by the corrupt president of the United States. Hope to have more on that as well as this week moves forward. Some good redistricting news out of Utah last Monday. A judge ordered that the very Republican-leaning state must redraw its congressional maps, finding that a GOP legislative effort to carve up Democratic-leaning Salt Lake City into four different districts, kind of like what Texas has now done to Austin, that was done in violation of the will of the voters, who back in 2018 had voted to curb partisan redistricting in the state and to have fair maps that were balanced and so forth. The judge gave lawmakers 30 days now to produce a new map that meets the requirement of the 2018 ballot initiative meant to assure fair maps in the Beehive State. The result is likely to be at least one competitive district among Utah's currently four Republican U.S. House districts. Then on Tuesday last week, yet another amid a string of losses for Trump in the lower courts of late, as a federal judge tossed Trump's lawsuit against 15 federal judges in Maryland whose decisions he didn't like. So he sued them, with the judge calling Trump's effort, quote, potentially calamitous and a, quote, constitutional free-for-all. Should presidents be allowed to sue federal judges because of decisions that they do not like? Also on Tuesday, the Israeli military said that its strike on a Gaza hospital that killed at least 20 people included at least five journalists, including an AP journalist, receiving far more coverage that day, of course, was the news that pop star Taylor Swift and Kansas City Chief NFL player Travis Kelce had announced their engagement on Instagram. Priorities. Am I right, news media? On that same day, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, announced that it was suspending about 30 employees because those workers had dared to write to Congress to warn, a duty to warn, that the Trump administration had gutted the nation's ability to handle hurricanes and floods and other extreme weather disasters at this point, effectively wiping out, according to the more than 100 FEMA employees who signed this letter, wiping out all of the improvements that the agency had made following the Hurricane Katrina disaster down in New Orleans 20 years ago this past week. Donald Trump has undone all of that, according to these employees. And now at least 30 of them have been fired for saying so. In much more encouraging news, by Tuesday night last week, this time out of the theoretically deep red state of Iowa, Democratic State Senate candidate Caitlin Dre won a special election for an Iowa State Senate seat in a district that had been held by Republicans for many years. In fact, the district had not elected a Democrat since 2013, and even then it was under a different configuration, a different district number due to redistricting. So last year, the district where Dre won, the Democratic candidate on Tuesday, that same district voted for Donald Trump in the presidential election by 11 points. But last Tuesday, Dre won the seat by a similar 11 points. That's a 22-point swing. She won 55% of the vote to the Republican challenger 44%. So a huge victory for Democrats in the middle of a very, very red part of the country. In addition to flipping a state Senate seat, Dre's win also breaks the Republican supermajority in the Iowa Senate, which had stood since 2022, as Democrats continue a remarkable streak of special and off-year election wins that bodes very, very poorly for Republicans in next year's midterms. No wonder Donald Trump is trying to game the system. More on that, and specifically more on Iowa elections in a little bit. But by midnight on Tuesday night, President Trump's almost certainly unlawful 50% tariffs on imports from India, which is a tax paid by Americans when those goods are imported here, that 50% tariff had taken effect, jeopardizing the country's relationship with the U.S. By week's end, Narendra Modi, the prime minister of India, one of our largest trading partners, was meeting in a rare summit with the leaders of China and Russia. So prior to all of this, mind you, the U.S. had become India's number one trading partner. We will see now if that remains the case now that we've slapped a 50% surcharge onto the American consumers who buy anything that comes from India. So great job, Donald Trump. On Wednesday last week, a judge ruled that Kilmar Abrego-Garcia cannot, in fact, be deported again from the U.S. until at least early October. Due process now underway, we hope. A grand jury in Washington, D.C., declined to indict the so-called sandwich guy. Remember him? The former DOJ employee who threw a hoagie at a federal officer in D.C. in what has become a remarkable string of losses for federal prosecutors in D.C. who have in recent weeks, in case after case after case, failed to secure indictments from grand juries, which almost never fail to approve indictments. You know, the old joke that you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. Well, apparently not in D.C. anymore, where grand juries made up of members of the public are seemingly pushing back. It's kind of extraordinary. Pushing back against the Trump administration, it seems, including on behalf of the guy who actually threw a ham sandwich at a federal law enforcement official carrying out Trump's federal takeover of D.C. On that same day, Trump would go on to extend his control over the nation's capital by taking over management of Union Station, taking it away from Amtrak. All of that news on Wednesday, however, was quickly sidelined, at least momentarily, it seems, by yet another school shooting in the U.S., this time at a Catholic school in Minneapolis, where two children were killed, at least 17 people injured, after a shooter opened fire through the church windows during a Catholic school mass. But even that news was quickly sidelined, not by an announcement from the CDC that they were now calling for action on school shootings as a public health issue. No. The news that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the head of the Department of Health and Human Services, now was firing the director of the CDC, Susan Menares, after less than a month on the job. She, too, like Lisa Cook at the Fed, is challenging her firing after she spent years at the agency as a public health official. And I'm really glad to see these folks pushing back and not just rolling over for the Trump administration, saying, no, we're going to sue. What you're doing is unlawful. No, I'm not going to move on. At least four top CDC officials submitted their own resignations in the wake of the agency director's firing. Politico reports that Menares would not cross certain, quote, red lines before that led to her firing regarding vaccination approval. Washington Post reports that the CDC leaders who resigned in support of her said that RFK Jr. was undermining vaccine science at the agency, where the New York Times reports there is a, quote, growing sense of despair at the world's formerly leading health agency among the changes being made by the Trump administration. And RFK Jr., who, it should be noted, has zero background as a health or science official. And on that same day, that same busy news day, it was reported that Donald Trump and his Russia-friendly Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, had revoked the security clearance of a top CIA Russia expert, reportedly one of the CIA's senior-most experts on Russia, just days after Trump's failed Alaska summit with Vladimir Putin, where Trump failed to broker a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine and failed to implement the so-called punishing sanctions that he vowed to impose on Russia if Putin did not agree to a ceasefire in his unlawful years-long invasion of Ukraine. So again, if you don't like the message, I guess fire the messenger. Oh, and you don't like the presidential candidate that you defeated last year? Well, revoke her Secret Service protection. That's what Trump did last Friday after her Secret Service detail had Kamala Harris's Secret Service detail had previously been extended by President Biden because Donald Trump is just one hell of a guy. Emphasis on hell and eventually burning there. But more pushback against Trump's big government authoritarianism came on Friday as well, as Washington Post reported that two Northern Virginia school districts sued the Education Department as the agency under Trump's iron thumb seeks to freeze funding for schools over policies that he does not like. In this case, over their gender policies. Arlington Public Schools and Fairfax County Public Schools both pushed back with lawsuits against the U.S. Department of Education on Friday, seeking to bar the federal agency from freezing millions in federal funds over gender policies that allow students to use bathrooms and other facilities that match their identity. The Trump Education Department, turning civil rights law on its head, claims that those policies violate federal law banning discrimination on the basis of sex. I'll let you try to figure any of that out. The department urged the districts and three others in the D.C. suburbs to change the policies or risk losing funding. The districts have so far all refused to do so. Good for them. And quickly before a break and more news on the authoritarian front, last Friday on a very busy news day, it was reported that the White House is planning to use a so-called pocket rescission to slash more than $3 billion in foreign aid that had already been appropriated by Congress, approved and appropriated. The procedure the administration is using to do so has previously been found to be unlawful by the Government Accountability Office, the nation's top nonpartisan federal watchdog, but the Trump administration is going to try and muscle it through anyway as they continue to show disdain for Congress and the Constitution in this case by taking away power of Congress to do whatever they want with foreign aid. Let's take a break right there. We will right in the middle of last Friday, and we will come back to pick up on that and the busy holiday weekend in news and some terrible reporting on it from the mainstream corporate media, specifically in regard to elections and voting, where we've got some good news even amid the bad reporting. That and Desi Doyen with our latest Green News Report, all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Yeah. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I wish there was. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Welcome back to our while we were out episode, catching you and me both up from a week that was, at least when we were trying, if not necessarily succeeding, to look the other way from the daily madness. All right, let's see. We left off in the middle of last Friday, very busy news day, where we had some good electoral news for those of us who stand in opposition, at least, to Donald Trump's attempted authoritarian takeover of American democracy. On Friday, just a few days after a Democrat in Iowa, we told you about in the last segment, had flipped this long-held Republican seat in the state Senate by 11 points in a district that just last year went for Donald Trump by 11 points. Well, just a few days after that, it was reported that Iowa's U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, perhaps seeing some writing on the wall in the otherwise reportedly red state, plans to not run for re-election after all in 2026, despite pressure from fellow Republicans to do so. Dropping out of that race continues to improve the odds for a Democratic takeover of the majority in the U.S. Senate next year, even if it is still a very, very uphill climb. It's going to be much harder for Democrats to defend their seats and to flip seats next year, at least in theory, than it will be for Republicans, just the way the math and the maps turn out. But with Ernst dropping out, along with North Carolina's Tom Tillis also dropping out, not running next year, and the state's North Carolina's very popular former Democratic governor, Roy Cooper, announcing that he is, in fact, running for that seat that Republican Tom Tillis is leaving. And, by the way, Ohio's formerly popular Democratic U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown announcing that he will be running for the U.S. Senate again next year. Well, with all of that, things are going very much in the Democrats' direction for now in what could turn out to be a blue wave year if history and Donald Trump's terrible polling are any indication. Picking up the Senate, flipping the Senate, I think is still a very tall order.
Yes, it
is.
But these small changes do put it closer in that box.
All the things that they would need to do that are so far falling into place. But they're Democrats, so I'm sure they'll be able to figure out how to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah.
Anyway, shortly after the news about Ernst choosing to not run for re-election next year, some more good news along similar lines. The far-right Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley, appointed years ago initially by the state's then far-right governor, Scott Walker, well, she announced that she will not be seeking re-election next year herself, giving Democrats a chance to expand their new majority on the state's high court in Wisconsin. Republicans have lost three of the last four Supreme Court elections in Wisconsin, and the GOP's long-standing hard right control of the court's majority along with it. Well, now liberals have a very thin majority on the court, and that could get a lot bigger next year with Bradley now deciding not to run. And speaking of next year's elections, on Friday last week, well, Missouri made it official. The Republican governor from my old home state jumped into the gerrymandering wars himself to order a redrawing of the U.S. House map in the Show Me State, expanding Trump's desperate push to try and steal as many House seats from voters again, in this case, from largely minority voters, seats from minority voters, as many as possible in order to hold on to the Republican majority in the U.S. House next year by using Republican-controlled legislatures to steal as many seats as possible via gerrymandered House maps before voters even have a chance to cast a vote in next year's midterm elections. On Saturday, Trump disappointed many Americans who might who thought he might have been dead by declaring yet again that he was going to be issuing an executive order mandating the use of strict voter ID in every state before next year's midterm elections, that he was going to somehow end mail-in balloting. Of all, because obviously he fears he's going to lose next year, or at least his party will lose next year's election in a rout. So he's been threatening to do this in recent weeks, along with threatening to cancel, you know, absentee voting, imposing voter ID. But the thing is, he has no constitutional power to do so. We've discussed this before. We've discussed it many times, in fact. But I guess I have to do it again because the corporate mainstream media has been doing a terrible job of making that point clear to voters. For example, New York Times headlined its coverage of Trump's latest weekend tweets this way. Headline, quote, Trump says he will sign executive order mandating voter ID. Subhead, he also wants to restrict mail-in voting and allow only paper ballots. The Constitution doesn't give the president explicit authority over election law. Explicit authority. It doesn't give him any authority other than to enforce the law. I guess the DOJ can help enforce the law. But no, it does not give him explicit authority to change laws. In fact, it explicitly gives such authority to the states and in some cases to Congress, but not to the executive branch, period. End of story. Why is the New York Times helping Trump's fiction here at all with a headline like that?
Privileging the lie, as it were.
Exactly. And they aren't the only ones, sadly. Reuters was no better. They did the same thing in their report. Headlined, quote, Trump says he will order voter ID requirement for every voter. They go on to report in the story, quote, earlier in August, Trump pledged to issue an executive order to end the use of mail-in ballots and voting machines ahead of the 2026 midterm elections. However, federal elections are administered at the state level, and it is unclear whether the president has the constitutional power to enact such a measure. It's unclear. Who knows? It's thus unclear. What we could use is someone to come in and decide it for us, like, oh, I don't know, his corrupted Supreme Court, because it's so unclear, right? Well, it is not unclear, Reuters. It is completely clear. He has no such power, period. Unless, of course, the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court makes up some phony claims about what is actually in the Constitution in order to grant him those powers. Other than that, it is perfectly clear he does not have the power. And when you have major news outlets reporting on the news this way, it's unclear if he has the constitutional power. The Constitution doesn't explicitly give authority to the president to act. When they report it that way, well, you know, if you see it like that in enough places, one might start to get the idea that, you know, we're all just about one Supreme Court ruling away from the president actually taking over American elections, elections that are run not by the president, not even by the federal government, but that are run by the states. So not helpful, New York Times. Not helpful, Reuters. The stuff that you report matters. The words that you choose matters. Do better. Do better as if democracy and, frankly, your First Amendment right to exist, to a free press, stands in the balance? Or is it unclear if the president has the authority to take away First Amendment press freedoms? Is that unclear? Is that amendment specific enough for you? All right. Had to skip a few things, but that's close enough to get you and me both caught up on most of last week's long, long week of news, other than, of course, our Green News Report, which is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. That old tune, I remember that. You know, it's been pretty cool here, surprisingly, all summer long in Los Angeles while the rest of the country is melting. But now we're getting our heat. See how long that lasts. Anyway, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Customs and Border Patrol agents moving in on crews working the Bear Gulch fire in the Olympic Peninsula.
Trump's Border Patrol agents arrest fire crew members battling Washington wildfire.
It was a huge relief for us and a win for the Everglades.
Judge halts operations at federal detention camp in protected Florida Everglades. Plus,
we don't allow windmills. We're not allowing any windmills to go up.
Trump escalates his war on wind, even as extreme heat pushes U.S. electricity demand to record highs.
Brilliant. All of those stories and much more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Our friends on the East Coast, they dodged a bullet there. There was a hurricane heading for these hurricane errands, but it just touched land and then went back out to sea. Not even the hurricanes want to come to America anymore.
I know the feeling. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we've been gone for a little more than a week, so you've got a little bit more than a year to cover in the next 6 minutes. I'll shut up and let you have at it.
Okay. First up, in Washington State, federal immigration agents raided wilderness fire crews in the midst of battling the state's largest wildfire, despite federal rules prohibiting such enforcement actions during active emergency situations.
Rules? Who needs them?
The agents halted work for hours before arresting two firefighters on alleged immigration violations. Veteran firefighters warned such raids could have a chilling effect on recruitment amid staffing shortages combating multiple large wildfires across the region.
Genius.
In Europe, 2025 is officially the most destructive wildfire season on record. Fires have burned nearly 4,000 square miles in Europe so far. That is four times as much land this year as the average over the last 20 years, according to European Union data.
I wonder why.
Europe's historic fire season is also breaking records for emissions of climate-warming CO2 and other air pollutants.
Oh, that's why.
Scientists say man-made climate change is exacerbating wildfire risk by bringing more frequent and intense heat waves and droughts. In science, summer 2025 is among the hottest on record for the U.S., and it is officially the hottest ever recorded in the U.K., Japan, and South Korea. So it's not great news that a new study has found that extreme heat accelerates the aging of the human body at the molecular and cellular level, causing long-lasting damage to health. The researchers found that over time, the more extreme heat events people experienced, the faster their biological age accelerated relative to their chronological age, similar to smoking and drinking. A smaller study found a difference of 14 months in biological age between residents in places like Phoenix versus milder places like Seattle.
Wow.
In Florida, a federal judge has given the state 60 days to close and dismantle Republican Governor Ron DeSantis's hastily constructed immigration detention camp, nicknamed Alligator Alcatraz, because it is damaging the fragile, protected Everglades. The judge agreed with environmental groups Friends of the Everglades that the facility violated numerous federal environmental laws. Here's Eve Samples of Friends of the Everglades.
It was a huge relief for us and a win for the Everglades, and also a win for environmental law and order. The advocates of this detention center have presented it as being about law and order. There's real irony in the fact that it was built without complying with environmental law, which is what our case is all about.
And thank you, Friends of the Everglades.
Finally, the Trump administration is escalating its war on U.S. wind energy.
This decision was sudden, erratic, and insane.
That was Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont after the Trump Interior Department issued a stop work order late last week on an offshore wind farm that is 80% complete, citing unspecified national security concerns. It's the fourth major offshore wind project Trump has halted so far, and the administration also abruptly canceled nearly $700 million in funding for 12 infrastructure projects that would have gone to upgrade U.S. ports to support offshore wind energy development. It's part of Trump's broad efforts to kill off the entire sector by canceling offshore wind energy leasing, ending tax credits supporting domestic manufacturing and construction, and killing thousands of jobs. New England's electric grid operator warned Trump's accelerating attacks threaten the reliability of the nation's electricity supply. The cancellations come as new data show electricity demand in the lower 48 states hit a new all-time record high in late July during extreme heat waves.
And after billions of dollars had already been spent on these projects, he's just cutting them off.
Yep.
How's that for government efficiency? For much more on all of these stories and the rest that we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. I hope to have more on Donald Trump shutting down the wind farms in the days ahead.
Yes,
job
killing president strikes again.
Job killing, energy killing president.
Yep.
Anyway, got to get out. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Welcome back, Cotter. Good to see you. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. We have the privilege of being on your public airwaves thanks to folks like you who hit a donate button at bradblog.com or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog and Desi Doyen at
Green News Report.
There you go. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.